we are basically basing it on Annex 16 of the Australian Convention. And then the policy formulation, as I mentioned earlier, really requires a standing airport environmental committee to be established at airport where we do have a noise concern as part of the framework of communication and liaison with the local inhabitants, the people affected by the noise issues. And then through the ICAO balanced approach to noise management, we need to find solutions to an existing problem. The first one is reducing aircraft noise at source. In the case of the Department of Transport, and this is probably more applicable to the larger airports where we have some noisy aircraft, old aircraft, registered before 1977, and those are referring specifically to your jet aircraft. We are in the process of phasing them out. As a matter of fact, on the 1st of January, these aircraft are not compliant now. Then we have the next one, which is probably the most important one when it comes to local authorities. It's a question of land use planning. We need to promote comfort to the airport, and of course, to then adapt the land use to shift the new zones. The local authority must ensure compatible development within those boundaries. Then the next step in the 4-point plan of ICAO is noise abatement, where we are looking at specific operational procedures of aircraft to try and minimize the noise impact. This could mean the routing, the way in which they take off, what is the intersection take off, and some of the few of those, obviously taking into account the safety of the operation. The noise abatement procedures will never be implemented at the cost of aviation safety. And then we have the last one, operating restrictions. This could mean many things depending on what you wish to achieve at the airport. That could mean a reduction of the number of flights, type of day that they may fly, the question of whether the operations allowed at night, noisy aircraft banned from operating at night, closing the airport down at night. Those are the four key elements of the balanced approach from our care. Then with regard to calculation and position of aircraft noise, very important. Some airports, we are having some criteria. If you look at the policy statement, the Civil Aviation Authority must, in terms of formulated criteria, determine which airports are required to calculate aircraft noise contours. And those basically form the basis of the planning around that airport. It also touches on the concept of airport master planning. It's very important that all the airports in South Africa, and this is something that we are going to be stressing very intensely when we implement the National Airport Development Plan, is to make sure that these airports do have a master plan spanning at least, say, 20 to 50 years, and then that, together with the aircraft noise calculation, should then inform the land use planning around that airport, so we don't have issues as we currently have in Pretoria, where these airports probably existed as a strip, and then developed, and then there was some land use planning which did not really meet the requirements as for the noise contours. Then noise and track performance monitoring. As soon as you have identified the noise issue and you have calculated your noise contours, and of course the next step would be to make sure that the aircraft do actually follow the noise and track routing that they need to do, and there must be a monitoring system in place. This is probably more applicable to the larger airports, like the Global Tumbo, Shipping Shankars and so forth, where we do have that huge problem of large aircraft movement, which means that these airlines must follow those prescribed routes. If they deviate, they can be penalized. I'm not going to talk much about the environmental engine emissions aspect, because I think that is probably not applicable in this aspect. And then on implementation, just a few notes on implementation, we will be doing it as far as we can to administrative implementation, but of course it will also mean some legislative changes going forward, which will really will involve the environmental processes going forward. So that is in a nutshell what we have on the policy aspects from the Department of Transport. I do have a few slides also on the National Airport Development Plan if you wish to have some more information on the plan itself.
In fact, I thought by now you should go straight into what happened. This particular one.
Okay. is with regard to the document itself, and I've got quite a few slides, but I'll skip most of them and just highlight the important aspects. I just need to mention, as I said in the policy, we need to have a national airport development plan for purposes of integrated transport planning. I assume you are also aware of the so-called National Transport Master Plan. And I just want to point out that this plan that we have is basically one of the layers within the National Transport Master Plan dealing with airports, but it sits within a different modes of transport within the infrastructure network. So we all talk about integrated transport planning. As I've mentioned, it's not currently forming a proper integrated system, and that's why we need to change the planning. We need to address the gaps between the current airport network and the future design state. And of course, again, the question of individual airports integrated within the broader social and transport context. The vision for the network, as per the screen there, we are not going to go into detail, but it's efficient capacity, collective indicators, and all the rest of those with that. This shows actually the process. I'm not going to spend time on that. What we have done then is we've taken the policy that we have, and we looked at the gap assessment in terms of what is happening with our airport, or what do we want to achieve in terms of our policy statement. We've identified a couple of these issues. As a matter of fact, there were 17 policy statements that we have addressed in this document. We have also dealt with airport network planning, but also individual airport planning as such. And I must admit that this document talks more on a higher level. And maybe I should also mention that we have had engagements with provinces, all provinces in the country, as well as local authorities to the extent that they were available to attend those meetings with the provinces. So we have received quite a lot of input from them in terms of planning. But every time, sometimes we get input, if they want us to take this document even further into the detail aspect. And at this stage, unfortunately, we are not going too much into detail as such. What we are looking at here, licensing and registration, I think is very important, because we are looking at the question of international airport status, airport licensing requirements, if there are commercial activities, in other words, aircraft used for hire and reward, those airports must be licensed. We're going to require that all airports be registered, those ones that are currently unlicensed. And then we're also looking at a pre-approval process for greenfield development of airports, which is also a bit of a headache for us. We are also looking at a national, so-called national knowledge management system. Again, this is integration with the GIS system, with the ATMAP processes, to put the airports on the map, so that we can actually then have a proper handle on the airport network itself, with the integrated planning. On the individual airport planning, we have to balance quite a number of complex factors, specifically forecast demand, planning activity levels, optimizing economic impact, requirements of key partners and user groups, and compliance, of course, with the licensing legislation and the broader aspects. I must quickly just add at this point that when it comes to the broader compliance aspect, of course, aviation, we're only talking about the aviation-specific aspect, safety, security, of course, environment is only in as far as aviation is concerned. We do not wish to step on the toes of our colleagues in the Department of Environmental Affairs, and they deal with the environmental assessments and ROVs and all those aspects, so we are not venturing into that area. We always try to minimize environmental impact, as I said, carbon footprint, waste emission, and water use through the structure that we have in our policy with regard to the balanced approach. And integrated transport, appropriate management, operation and funding model. We've also found that many of these airports are not financially sustainable, and therefore we need to find some ways of dealing with that. Excuse me. The 5-year implementation plan that we have is to have the integration of airport network planning into transport and spatial planning coordination structures. International airports, how we handle them, like the mechanism to reserve land for key long-term airport developments, like the Oliver Tambo Cruise, the Cape Town International Cruise, development of the preferred option to provide the general air services, general aviation, and then of course the knowledge management system of the Department of Transport. And when it comes to individual airports, we have found that there is a lack of airport planning technical capacity. not quite sure how we're going to address that, but that is one of the things that we will be taking on a roadshow with the provinces and local authorities to see to what extent we can build capacity in that area. That's where also these planning issues are going wrong. We also will provide a detailed guide to support airport development, like a template master planning document. We'll explore potential mechanisms to improve private sector in airport planning and design. And then we will look at the most viable approach to security funding to support airside safety and security compliance. Four networks we've also developed from tools that we can launch this site. We are still testing them, but we can make them available to provinces and local authorities if they should wish to use some of those tools to assist them with the planning process. We've got five of them as listed on the screen, and that basically is in short where we are with the National Airport Development Plan. I know that we are dealing here with a very specific aspect with regards to Oceanian Airport, but I think if you look at the principles, we can drill it down and look at where can we assist with regards to the question of planning. Given the current arrangements, we need to look at options to mitigate what the impacts are. I think that is the aspect that the Civil Aviation Authority will be empowered to talk more about.
You haven't played any role in the current situation of
Chair, no, we have not been involved with the Oceanian Airport development as such, because it's a municipal airport. I must also refer to Schedule 4 of the Constitution. You will recall that there is a specific statement in there that talks about airports other than national and international airports are for current jurisdiction of provinces and national. So basically, if we reverse that, that means that the national only has jurisdiction, some jurisdiction over international and national airports. And in calculating or determining which airports are national, we are currently proposing that all the airports that are currently servicing scheduled air services that are required to be designated in terms of the Civil Aviation Act as secure airports to be considered as national airports, regardless of ownership. The international airports are actually quite clear which ones are those. But then we have quite a lot of other airports sitting as municipal and private, as well as provincial ownership. And Oceania would be one of those. So technically, part of the network, safely regulated by FACA. However, when it comes to planning and direct involvement with the National Department, it's not that close to the fire system.
Thank you very much. Can we quickly then invite the Civil Aviation Authority to take us? And once again, can we limit, where possible, to exactly what do you know and what's very intent and your role in that regard?
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. My representation is just oral as to the request based on just the facts around Oceanian Airport, because we've been dealing with this since 2012. The long and short of it, Oceanian is a municipal airport. It is duly licensed by Civil Aviation Authority. It is renewed every year. The training school there is also inspected and approved by the Civil Aviation Authority for compliance with the Aviation Act. So in terms of the statement that it is an unregulated training school, it depends on which context, but from the Aviation Act perspective, it is not unregulated. But having said that, the jurisdiction of the local authority, the SACA cannot usurp that jurisdiction in terms of the local authority's right to plan what it uses and where. So we've always asked the question, but where is the local authority in this? Obviously, they must have considered the noise impact versus the economic benefit. Because this is now stepping outside the SACA mandate. In terms of environmental compliance, again, local authority would be determining what zoning restrictions apply in what areas and then enforcing as such. What we do know is, as Mr. Bierman reminded in the National Airport Development Plan, there is sustainability issues. This school is the only economic activity on this airport. Say for a few private individuals flying there, maybe a maintenance operation, if there's any, but it would be ad hoc. This school is the only commercial activity that sustains this airport. But the airport serves a community interest in that it gives access to medical services very quickly if needed. Other than that, at this point, Oshodan Airport doesn't have much of a role, but in terms of the airport development plan, we do not know the future. It would be a very sad day to lose such infrastructure to the presence of other economic development. There has been calls for relocating the airport. That is something the local authority can consider if they so wish. But in the end, the whole relationship between ratepayer and local authority needs to determine what's best for the community and what happens at that airport. And that is not the national level to determine on their behalf what's best for them. All we do, we enforce a mandate, we make sure things are safe. They are actually very safe in terms of compliance to the aviation regulation. Yes, they're not in an ideal location, but so is over Tambo. If you talk of aircraft overflying houses and people, there's a lot more happening. But again, the balanced approach, there's going to be inconvenience of a number of ratepayers, but one has to also consider what's the benefit to the bigger bulk of the ratepayers of the presence of such economic activity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Chair, if you would wish to go into more detail about the training operation and the compliance thereof.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will flow from what my colleague from Aircraft Infrastructure has mentioned. The next aspect that we then follow is this and the existence of an airport. There's bound to be movement or operation. However, all these operations are then authorized equally by Federal Consideration Authority, which is empowered by the Act to license both operations and infrastructure. Each individual aircraft will then be inspected and evaluated by CAA to determine that indeed it is in safe condition for operation. The aircraft that are then cleared for safe operations are then used by the training school. Equally, the training school has its own independent or individual evaluation. In that sector, the aircraft then gets subjected to operation which then requires further maintenance. There will equally be a maintenance organization in the sense it needs to wear the school in place in order to maintain the specific aircraft that are operated by the school. Let's then go to operation. For any aircraft to take off, it has to leave the ground. It will bound to fly over build-up area, depending how long during operation is over build-up area. But it will be a very isolated case that it happens that the airport is solely outside any build-up area. If it's going to take off somewhere during state of flight, it will fly over build-up area. However, on an annual basis, the license issued to both aircraft, both the training schools, both the maintenance organization expire. Then CAA on annual basis will go back one if the applicant or the operator intends to have a continuous operation. They will then put the application to CAA, will conduct another investigation or evaluation. So that happens on annual basis. In between this annual inspection, there are also other inspections that we do go and check with the school, maintenance organization, and the people that are used by the school, both RRB maintenance or pilots. They are still current with their licenses and they still comply with the civil aviation regulation as required on a continuous basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other addition from your side?
No, fine.
Honorable members, these are the submissions that were left behind in our last hearing. So if there are any clarity-seeking questions, this is the opportunity. Just to remind yourself, once again, colleagues, that we are not going to arrive at determination. It should be question for clarity in order for us to be able at the appropriate time to arrive at what are we deciding. Anything that you wanted to get for them? I'm not about to help us. You're welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. This information was, and I think I must direct this question to Johan Beerman. In terms of the issues of this airport, which is in the middle of the city, of the town of Oostwolde, What options would there be in terms of, from your perspective, in trying to solve the issues in terms of the location, if any, in terms of the issues that we have with the location being in your opinion? Are there any other options? Is there something that can be considered to try and solve this in an amicable way? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think with regards to the question, I think I mentioned the IKU balanced approach to waste mitigation, but I do know that the kind of operation that you have in those roads is a difficult one, because that is a circuit operation. So it's not a question of aircraft taking off and then disappearing, and then you have aircraft coming into land or take off later. So with regards to circuit operations, it's actually quite a difficult one to solve. Because I've looked at the graph with regard to the current routing, and it shows that it is actually going towards the city centre, right around the town, the city. So I'm not sure what solution we have other than to try and adjust again the flight path to take them perhaps a little further around. But I may have to ask the CAA just to assist on the practicality of that. We know that to the one end we've got mountainous terrain. So we have some limited options there, but maybe we can look at the actual flight circuits and see if we can do something about that.
Honourable Member, I can perhaps add this is where the pressures imposed by operating restrictions will start to play a role, and that's the relationship between ratepayers and local authorities. Need to decide what's acceptable. At some point, it may not be viable for the school to stay, and then they will by themselves go somewhere else if the local authority does not relocate the land. Because I believe also the national dilemma is either the people or the operators, and both suffer. Because there was talk of locating it further away from itself, but the built up area, to move it further away, but the operators apparently has an issue. So, if operating restrictions makes it less attractive, because that's what the local authority will need to do if they listen to their ratepayers, the school by itself needs to decide whether it's still viable to stay there within those limitations. In other words, hours, number of flights, but I would rather say put a cap on the hours. You're not flying before or not after.
This one is the decision that was made to us. I think that the information that the license is for you, I know, and the assessment of the station is unfair. And then it takes us comfortable and says there's an assessment of that anyway. But I just want to find out, because I received the proposal saying that the rent in Golden Globe Airport also to stimulate and country. Want to find out whether you receive time payments from things that you have received from the food board. If it is similar practice in Golden Globe and then what is the trade in the country financial services?
Thank you, Chair. The operation will be in a similar light, especially when you look at the environment of a training organization. At this stage, I'm not aware or have received any notification from Bondogom or any other airport in a similar environment that offer the same services. Thank you.
Any other in the construction of this particular effort, was there any form of community consultation that you know?
Yes, we are aware of a consultation that was held on in Oudtshoorn itself, which as the SOCA we attended as participants basically. That was some 3-4 years ago.
Any further questions on the government? Thank you very much. I think in this regard, do you have something?
No.
Thank you, Chair. I think specifically, just to reiterate, that when we presented the perspective of the municipality, the organization is one of many community-based organizations and business organizations and so on. And in terms of the participation, it was just, there seemed to be just one organization that's objecting to it. I think the second issue is that whether there's an issue or not has to be debated. And clearly, in terms of the regulation, we have a provincial bylaw and we have a local bylaw. And compliance with noise levels are just assessed in terms of the SUN regulation. And all of the tests done by the district indicate that they comply with the noise regulation. And we do have, I think earlier was mentioned, we do have an operating time start in the morning and in on 6 o'clock. I'm not exactly when, but around 6 o'clock. So there is clearly an operating time around that. And I think part of the issue was the licensing of the airport and the safety of the aircraft and the flight path and so on, which was the responsibility of DOT and Civil Aviation Authority. Those are the only other issues.
Thank you very much. Just to verify, did we receive all the outstanding documents that we expected in this particular letter?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, this is more of a subjective question, if I may. I just want to hear from Mr. Chetty, because he is currently trying to get the municipality on its feet again. In your opinion, the airport, is it good for the community of Otterim and the economy of Otterim? What would the effect be if there was no airport in Otterim?
Thank you.
Just a comment on that. Otterim is a depressed town. We have about, in the region of around 18,000 households, of which 7,000 households are independent. And when we start looking at the Stellenbosch Bureau and defining poverty and recent defining poverty, if the limit for indigent is in the region of 2 times the pension, in other words, about 3,000 rand, if you earn 3,001 rand, it doesn't make you not poor. So there's an element of non-core which is in the region of another 5,000 households. So we have a very limited number of households which are economically sustainable. So any attempt to create jobs is crucial. We have a drought in two small communities and that's impacted severely on the economy. So we've had extensive discussions in the last 2 days about what are the options for the next 20 to 30 years for Otterim. Clearly, it's tourism, and we have to build tourism. It's agriculture and agriculture processing. And thirdly, we have the FANDF, which is there, which is closely located to the airport and uses the airport every now and then. And there is a joint agreement that we're going to try and get the Free State Battalion to locate them. So, in future, the airport becomes vital to their own operation. So what is clear, whatever we do has to be it has to improve the socioeconomic conditions of people in there in terms of shared growth and shared prosperity. Secondly, it has to comply with all of the environmental regulations and it has to be sustainable. And thirdly, in order to there is some level of discomfort with the noise and so on, but we have to ensure that they meet the required, or they below the required level. So, in the way that we deal with car noise, you don't have to deal with that. So, in short, it provides jobs, it provides a number of small businesses with accommodation and so on. We don't have big hotel chains, but it's distributed. And there's about, in the region at any time, about 400 people
to a possible of the flight school at level 4 economy in that area. So that's why it's critical, and a number of organizations, whether it's NGO, community organization, or the chamber of business in this case, all of them are saying, let's keep the airport in here, and let's try and find a happy medium to satisfy the majority of the people. It's not going to be able to satisfy everyone, but satisfy the majority. Thank you. I'm going to
Mr. Chief, thank you very much. Can I just ask you, in terms of the impact of the airport in the community, first of all, what is the direct financial benefit to the town of Oakville? In other words, what is the income that you're actually deriving from the airport and the school? And do they have any social and corporate responsibility that they are actually enacting in terms of the community? You did mention the 400 jobs, so I think that is directly as a result of the flying school, or is that specifically in general? But is that specifically of the flying school? If you can just answer that for me, please. Thank you.
Yeah, in terms of the direct financial benefit.
Can I also, but that you're trying to be distinct and short term, say about that.
Thank you, Chair. I think when you start by, we haven't quantified the exact direct financial benefit. There's a lease agreement for which they provide. I can get you the figures, or it has been actually in the lease document that we came earlier. In terms of corporate social responsibility, they support some schools, they do training in other areas and so on. And the 400 jobs, I think, total for the airport, the maintenance, the flight school, the cleaning of the aircraft, and so on.
So, sorry to belabor the point, I'm just trying to find out, Mr. Chetty, what actual direct financial benefit does the airport give to the community? So, if you want to reply to that later, maybe you can say that. But it's important for us from the Petitions Committee to understand what benefit does the flying school have to the community. I think that needs to be outweighed against all the negatives. Thank you.
You will want to have submission on
how would your submission
by when can we expect it?
I think that we can can I do it by mid next week?
Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of what during hearing. And thank you very much, Shechi and your team. Thank you very much, Raymond and Civil Aviation Authority for coming. The information you have shared with us would make us be better off should we not have this information. We might have been falling into situations that were not going to be in the best interest of everybody that is, having the interest of the South. Thank you very much. You are free to excuse yourself and to other businesses. That is what I say. Some of in particular the ones that they were reading, they have just sent them this morning so they could print them for ourselves. But by the time we'll be taking the chance, I guess they'll be in everybody's hands. Thank you very much. You are free, and I just hope you are not going to take the off day or start running around in the city. Go back to your work and then to the people of South Africa. Thank you. In 2 minutes, we'll be getting into the next hearing just to give those who are moving out to show you the town in Jarabe. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that.
Proceed with the next hearing. The next hearing, honorable members, is the outstanding information from the municipality. So they are the ones who are going to take us through what transpired in the allegations forwarded to us by I'm now going to invite Executive Mayor Councillor Paul Maran to take us through. Oh. If you can, just make it to.
Chair, do you wish me to go and chase her, or shall we just start? I'm in your hands here.
I know, being an executive mayor, she might charge you if you stand in the office. So I'm trying to save you. If you can quickly just check that out, the whereabout of them, it will be good for us. Oh, no, I'm sure she's responding to nature. Then she'll join us in. One minute more has been allocated for to extend our company. Can we be in order then? We've got sufficient time to deal with this other business, but we don't have sufficient time to deal with the work ahead of us. Thank you very much. Without waste of time, we would now invite the executive mayor of Nasna, Councillor J. Walmaran, on the podium. Just to repeat what I said earlier, that time is not in our side. Help us to manage it as much as we can. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for allowing us the opportunity. As you said, you don't want us to waste time. So we will. You have received several inputs from the petitioner. So what we will do is the municipal manager will respond to a few of them, and then specifically we are talking about the issue of the illegal appointment of the municipal manager. Then I will give a brief introduction about that. So I will now straight hand over to the MM, and then we've got a file here for you that we will submit. The annexes we didn't email to you. All the other documentations we've emailed, but specifically we are going to refer to certain annexes. Here is the copy of that, and we will give it to the committee clerk. So I will now hand over to the MM.
Just before the municipal manager, Honorable Mark.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chair, I think it will be proper before we can even listen to the presentation of the municipality to get clarity from the executive mayor around the newspaper article that she wrote, where serious allegations were made informed you as a chairperson, not acting from my capacity as a person, but on behalf of the committee, and it really left wrong impressions in the public, particularly those that are residing in Naisna and all over the country, about the suspicions made by the executive mayor, particularly to us as the committee of parliament. Perhaps if you can get clarity, why this article, what has informed it? Because I'm saying, in any circumstance, there's always what you call or the ultra mater. You don't act on the basis of one side of story that is not even verified. So if we can get clarity why this article, because you are having copies that were circulated before us as members of the committee, if we can get clarity, I think it would be more helpful. Because for me, Chairperson, I think there's a cloud hovering us as a committee, and perhaps for us to be more objective, we need to clarify some of the issues that are raised by the Honorable Executive Mayor. Perhaps I must go straight. She's referring to recent decisions taken by Parliament.
That's all that Honorable Martin. When we open, I remarked vividly on it, and I told them that it was wrong, but I don't have any problem if you said you would want even them to speak to me.
Please.
But the matter, I address it very, you know, strongly at the beginning of the meeting.
Please.
Executive Mayor, if you were to comment on the article that I even spoke about it when we opened the meeting before.
So I just need to get clarity, because the last time when it came to Naisna, you said some of the issues, as an alternative member, I may participate in, some may not. So I just want to find out so you can give clarity as to what matters in this room I can contribute and participate and what I may not. And I'm going to hold you to that as well. So I would like to get clarity on that, please.
I remember that. We, as a member of NCOP, alternate member, even if you were not alternate member, one would not have to stop you from being in a particular meeting. I don't have authority to do it. But the issue that makes us to request that you will sit if you want, but you may not participate, is when there were allegations that you are inflected in the matter. So we were trying to say, let's save you from our side, not to, you know, worsen the situation. But tomorrow they will say, the Honorable Red has been a player and a referee. He has been on the ground when these things happen. And again, when we appeal, it's still, you know, the person that we give him the appeal. That was the reason for the request, Honorable Red.
Chair, I really appreciate you looking out for my well-being. I'm sure it will not be the last time. But I do want to say there's three items that's up for discussion. And as far as I know, there's only one that was causing this. So are you saying that because of that one, I'm not allowed to participate in any? Or is it just that one item?
I'm not sure whether do I hear what you're saying. Because the decision was what came after we were told that one way or another, basically being a constituency officer and what have you, there were allegations leveled against you. And I'm unable at this stage to say on this one, not on this one. Thank you very much for your understanding. Honorable Manopoto.
Just one clarity. Honorable Rose is the alternative member of WHO, because to me, alternative means that if that member is not there, it can come to me. So, if all members of the committee are present, then the alternate member is present.
I'm sure it doesn't even need members to worry about it. Like I'm saying, if you check on the list of provinces, they put one or two and then say one alternate or what have you. To us, whether they're all in there, it's not a problem. Problem is when we happen to vote. Then we limit the vote to each province. Can we proceed on this regard, particularly that Honorable Lloyd have shown an indication of understanding my explanation. Can we then invite the Executive Mayor to speak to the issue raised by Honorable Mohabi and myself?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to apologize to yourself and to the committee if I in any way have offended this committee with that article. And I did take note of what you said in your opening remarks. That's why I didn't want even to say anything about that. We did take note of it, and it was called from our side that we didn't attend the first one. But we are here now, so I think we must just proceed. I just want to repeat it. I want to apologize for whatever was in that. It's offended you guys. The committee. Sorry if I offended the honorable members of this committee.
Thank you very much. I know for people who are not residents of Parliament, they might here and there happen to fall. Try to balance your understanding of Parliament. Honorable Mokwele, Honorable Mad, that order.
Thank you very much, Chair, and my apology for arriving late. Usually on Wednesdays we have programming. The time clashes with the petition. Honorable Chair, you know, I don't think we must take, as committee, we must take this issue of the executive media light, because it will set a precedent where we are not taken serious as the committee. The manner in which she outlined his I don't know whether it was his personal view or view as a mayor in this article, it somehow dents the image of the committee and the objective that the committee needs to achieve. We must not take it as if yes, I know the executive mayor has apologized. So what? It must be on record that as the committee, we are not happy about the conduct. Firstly, secondly, if the mayor didn't understand what was expected from her through her office, he would have written a letter to you as the chairperson and then requesting the explanation to your office. But she chose not to do that. Rather, she chose to go to the media and put her personal views about the committee. Really, as a committee member, I'm not happy. I've just read her input here. It's like she's undermining us as if we don't have the legislative obligation to perform our duties as the committee. And we are not taking any side. For her to come before us is for us to get her side of the story, so that when we come to the determination as the committee, we have both sides of the story, Mr. Hempens and the municipality side of the story. From that, then we'll be able to make our determination. So it must not be as if it's just an apology. I apologize, guys. It's fine. I'm sorry. I apologize. We are not. I'm not happy about it. As well. Thank you.
Honorable Mohat. Just to put also a rider on what Honorable Mokwele said, I think as a point of emphasis, we must avoid the situation where tomorrow wrong impressions and insinuations would be created around the role of Parliament. And that is why earlier on I wanted to emphasize that how we relate with the municipality should be viewed in a manner of a unitary state where we are not contesting each other, but instead we are complementing each other. Two, I think we must also give lessons, because at times people react out of ignorance. You know, ignorance in a sense that
immediately you go out and make an utterance that is unbecoming and come back quickly and say you are sorry. Our main worry is the damage that has been caused, and I think as the committee you've got an obligation to ensure that you correct that so that it doesn't happen even in the future, regardless of whether it will be this select committee or any other committee. Perhaps you must also make the executive mayor aware that we have full responsibility to ensure that we protect the interests of both the residents in Naisna, the municipality, and whoever that comes and appears before this committee. And maybe we must make it categorically clear that if you go and check Section 69, your appearance before this committee is not having any conditions from your side. For an example, in your letter, because I think Chairperson, you need to clarify other issues. In your article, you said there's no way that would appear before this committee together with Mr. Hampton. I'm saying, procedurally, you don't have the right to dictate for the committee, go and check your provision of Section 69 of the Constitution, which outlines clearly that this committee has got the right to summon any person or any institution. Two, I just want to emphasize the executive mayor. Part of our responsibility is to ensure that we promote cooperative governance. And if you go and check provisions of Section 41 of the Constitution, there are clear principles that are outlined of cooperative governance, particularly ITR. And I'm emphasizing this point from my capacity as the chair of COCTA. Because tomorrow I might be saying, Naisna, you have performed well, can you come and appear before the committee? Then at the end of the day, we get a different story. So perhaps you must clarify why this thing is important. If you check Section 41 of Section 1E, of the Constitution, very clearly saying that much as we adhere to the principles of cooperative governance, we have an obligation to respect the constitutional status of institutions, powers, and functions of government in other spheres. I think it's important in very clear that you must take note of it. If you go to F of that provision again, it is saying when we exercise our powers, we should do that in a manner that doesn't encroach on other spheres' integrity. So in this case, when you go out and just make assertions about this committee, you are clearly putting our integrity at stake. And I think perhaps you must also emphasize our main reason for inviting you is also to clarify a cloud hovering over the head of the municipality. We don't have any concluding statement that we have uttered. Instead, we said, Mr. Hampton, you have appeared. You have written a petition to NCOP. Your petition is before us. Before we can even make pronouncement, you must first investigate. And you are doing that with the provision of the same Section 41, Subsection 1H, which makes it clear that how we cooperate, it must be in a form of a mutual trust and faith. So I'm just saying, Chairperson, for us or for one to be really clear in terms of ensuring that we accept the apology of the executive mayor, Chairperson. I was going to suggest that this committee must resolve that the mayor must not only apologize to us, she must also write back an article clearing the utterances that she made in that particular newspaper around us, where she made the reference that she can't even waste the taxpayers' money by appearing before this committee. So I'm just saying, that in that case, it would be fair enough for us to clearly leave the integrity as constitutional obligation of us not being hindered by any person in that regard. That will be my submission, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chairperson, I'm
going to
take
or maybe the technique for you,
Nothing.
Thank you. Just to reiterate what Honorable Mohapi has raised. The integrity of the committee is at stake.
therefore, it's important to executive making a point to go to the media to write an article to explain a non-attendance. She must make the same effort to go and make a written apology to us so that the community must be aware of the apology. Not only the community of men, because remember, the community has the confidence in this. We are the last resort of the people of South Africa who, wherever they are frustrated, the service delivery, whoever, they come to us. So if our integrity of the community is tainted, going to be a challenge for us moving forward. So that's why to second the proposal that the executive mayor made a written apology to the same media.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to give you that space. No, but we are on the same business. I just wanted to say, honorable members, through the statement we are referring to, the reason why you were all being favored with that statement, it's because it did not go as well with the committee and myself as the chair of the committee. But from where I was thinking, as much as I agree that ignorance cannot be used as an excuse in law, the fact that now an emphasis has been made, executive mayor, statement offended not only myself, even members themselves. They felt one way or another you acted across the line. I'm sure referring to the same section 69, which spoke about evidence or information before the National Council of Provinces. Section 69A, it says this committee may summon any person to appear before it to give evidence on oath or affirmation or to produce documents. That goes along with the D, receive petition, representation, or submission from any interested person or institution. This provisions of the Constitution, Executive Mayor, clearly were contravened by your article that you wrote about the committee, where you said we declined to attend basically because going into a meeting with the same petitioner, you will be, in your own word, legitimizing his case. To the committee, the issue of legitimizing or illegitimizing of the issue, it's not our business. Our business is to give every citizen of the Republic a fair hearing and listening of evidence in your disposal. The very same statement which you said the matter has been closed in your own way. The closing of the matter by the municipality and its own citizen might not be automatic. That will then be the closing of the matter by the National Council of Provinces. The National Council of Provinces, as by the sections that I've quoted, has got its own, discretion upon receiving any evidence, any submission, to do the necessary. in some committees, to mention an example, the intelligence committee. You don't have phones in the meeting. One reason is you will communicate things that are not supposed to be communicated. And it's sometimes not helpful when the very same custodian of the law, people who are supposed to protect and exercise the content of the Constitution, are doing exactly that, you know, exchanging communication in the expenses of the institution that they must defend. It doesn't go well. And I guess we'll refrain from doing that, honorable members. We may not help, you know, to reconstruct and make South Africa to arrive where we wanted it. I would doubt. No, that's my observation as a leader and seeing things that are happening. Yeah, well, it's true. That's why I'm remarking on an open meeting to say, let's not send amongst ourselves messages that will not help ourselves into moving forward. Having said all this, Executive Mayor, the committee would want you to reverse in the very same manner that you have done the statement to restore the dignity and protect the integrity of the committee. Can you then take it in that way? When will you go and reinstate the integrity of the committee?
We will take it under advisement, and I think by tomorrow we will be happy to do that.
Thank you very much. Can we then proceed, honourable member, on that note? Honourable Wana.
Good morning, everybody. Let me apologize for getting late in the meeting. Chairperson, let me apologize to you. So, before you close this media input, my analysis is that the person who was writing this, she was very sarcastic and got an element of undermining the collective.
Maybe Honorable Wana, if I were just to check if there's anything that out of what we said the Executive Mayor should do, you feel something is not covered. Can we deal with that one? We have agreed that the content of the article have been damaging to the integrity of the committee. That we have agreed, all of us. Is anything outside that? I'm unfailing. Thank you very much. Honorable Mwati.
Chairperson, I was going to ask that a copy of a letter be furnished to you for the purpose of our control. You are doing the job.
Thank you very much. Chechi, are you comfortable? Yes. Thank you very much. Can we then proceed in that regard, Executive Mayor? Back to you.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I will hand over to the Municipal Manager.
Chair, thank you very much. I will try to be as short and succinct as you requested right at the beginning. If at any time my accent speeds up, please stop me. Sometimes main Engels is not as good as main Afrikaans, which is an issue you will come to later. But you can deal with that as we go through this. I'm going to deal first with the allegation of corruption and maladministration of NISA Tourism. NISA Tourism is a Section 21 company. It is an independent company. It has its own board of directors, and it operates under the Companies Act. Therefore, if there are matters raised by the petitioner pertaining to the operational issues of NISA Tourism, it actually needs to be raised with NISA Tourism. Notwithstanding that, I think everybody is aware that NISA Tourism, which is now known as NISA Partners, does receive an annual grant from the municipality for providing various tourism services based on a service level agreement. This has been a practice in NISA for some 20 years now. And the reason essentially is that NISNA has one of the highest Gini coefficients in South Africa, and tourism and its related activities takes up over 50% of the local economy. So tourism is a critical component that goes on within our areas. Mr. Chetty was kind of going the same way with Otsuran a little bit. But tourism is a very skilled market, and because of a lack of capacity within a municipality such as NISA, NISA is not a wealthy municipality, neither is it a particularly big municipality. If you look at all of the various indicators, we sit right in the middle of the 240 or 250 municipalities. We're about 125 generally. So we're kind of a middle, very much a middle local authority. So we don't have internally tourism skills that are needed for to try and run an economy that's looking at a 50% plus. The company is not a municipal entity. I think the committee needs to be very clear on that. It is a completely separate Section 21. It is not a municipal entity. Some people think it is a municipal entity and is governed by the council. That is not how this actually operates. The municipality committed itself to a contribution of 4 million rand per annum as a grant to NISA Tourism within the current period of the service level agreement. The figure in the past has varied between 1.8 million to over 6 million. Round about the World Cup, we were paying NISA Tourism about 6 million to market the town. And as you're aware, we had both Denmark and France staying in NISNA for the duration of their period, which was a remarkable coup for the town to have. Our grant to NISNA Tourism is specifically highlighted separately in our MTRES, the Medium Term Revenue and Expenditure Framework, which is the legal budget document of municipalities. So we show it separately in that MTREF, and it is discussed separately within the MTREF. There's actually a full section on it as to how it operates. It is also separately accounted for in our annual financial statements. A grant is shown to NISNA Tourism separately. It is not shown as part of the grant in aid that most local authorities have. We show the grant separately. We have two grants that are made by the municipality in terms of service level agreement. One is to a very small organisation who basically maintains, for those of you who know NISNA, Leisure Isle, which is an island in the middle of the estuary, where a lot of very rich people live, but we pay the Ratepayers Association there to maintain our portion of that island. So we pay for two security guards and grass cutters and things like that. And then there is NISA Tourism. So they are specific grants that we look at. Contrary to Mr. Hampton's allegations, we don't award the grant without any assessment of the Section 21 company. And in this pile of documents, I would ask you to look at the 2010 service level agreement. It is actually marked as Annex A, but you can do that at your leisure later. And that sets out precisely what the requirements of the contribution of the grant deal with. Similarly, when we go into the 2015, and we have also put that in, the service level agreement, you will see exactly the same thing. It defines the services that NISNA Tourism has to do. And both the agreements have got irrefutable proof of the control mechanisms that are in place to deal with this. There was a comment passed by Mr. Hampton in his allegations regarding using the grant in 1 year as part of the cash flow operations of words to that effect. That is a perfectly normal day-to-day business of NISNA Tourism to actually run its books of account the way it does. There is nothing untoward in using a portion of the grant for its day-to-day activities. The fact that it was running at a deficit at that period is actually not relevant to anything. It's precisely the same way as any local authority operates when we get our equitable shares. NISNA Tourism submits operational and expenditure reports to our Section 80 Committee for Governance and Economic Development. which are then submitted to the NISA Municipal Council. These reports, and we would invite you to come to our council meetings and our Section 80 meetings when the NISA tourism report is discussed. It is a very robust debate that takes place, always, regarding this. I'm sorry to say that the committee does need to be aware of the fact that previously Mr. Hampson was a beneficiary of work that he did on behalf of NISA Tourism. During a period of this, there is absolutely no record, and we have checked with NISA Tourism, that Mr. Hampson lodged any complaints against the company, nor did he submit any claims of fraud and of corruption against the previous chief executive officers. Unfortunately, Mr. Hampson's contract came to an end because the work that he was doing, which was training needs in the townships, was identified as an area that needed to have someone who was an accredited trainer doing it. And unfortunately, NISA Tourism cancelled Mr. Hampson's contract. And it was at that point that we've had the various complaints being raised by Mr. Hampton against NISA Tourism in the first instance and NISA Municipality in the second instance. NISA Tourism has been audited by its own appointed auditors and by the Auditor General. So for a number of years, in fact I think for the last 10 years, it has been audited twice in the same year. The reason for this is because NISA Tourism operated under the old Western Cape Tourism Ordinance, which the Auditor General kept on running. And they did it as an adjunct to the NISA audit. So when they came to audit NISA, they would then go and audit NISA Tourism. NISA Tourism has its own auditors doing its own books of account, auditing its own books of account. So it gets audited twice. There has never been an issue raised by the internally appointed auditors, nor by those of the Auditor General. Additionally, NISA Municipality, we have received three consecutive clean audits. I don't like the term clean, and I know it's the wrong expression, but unfortunately it's the in thing at this point in time. And even prior to this, in the 11 years when I was the Chief Financial Officer of the municipality, the Auditor General has never raised any issue regarding the payment of the grant to NISA Tourism, the achievements of and the conditions stipulated in the various agreed SLAs with NISA Tourism, nor in the accounting and the reporting of the grant to National Tourism. In other words, no professionally trained financial experts have found anything wrong with any aspect of NISA Tourism or its funding arrangements with the NISA Municipality. And unfortunately, therefore, I have to question the purpose and the relevance of Mr. Hampton's accusations. And I'm being quite upfront about it. Do you wish me to carry on into the ISDF, or do you wish me to stop at this point?
Complete all your...
Thank you very much, Chair. The Integrated Strategic Development Framework, the ISDF, as it is known, I think I'm going to give a little bit of background. The ISDF is something that no other local authority in the country has actually been attempting, although a lot of local authorities are looking at us to see how this goes. By the same token, provincial government and the national government, who are also part of the teams that are involved in this, are also looking to see where this goes. And effectively, the Integrated Strategic Development Framework is taking a 30-year horizon, 20 to 30-year horizon of the local authority, with the single difference, because everybody does long-term planning now, but with the singular differences that within the ISDF, you can actually take out the spatial development framework, which is the legal requirement that needs to take place, plus the integrated development plan, the five-year plan that we're looking at. If we go back many years, Minister Manuel, as then was, said to local government, quite straightforwardly, he said, give us a plan. Well, it's taken many years, but NISA is in the throes of finalising its plan. going forward, which will then, as I say, take out the spatial development framework and the IDP from where we're going holistically on this. Now, it's common knowledge that Knysna Municipality awarded the tender to Knysna Creative Heads Consortium. This was in April 2013. It's also common knowledge that there were various objections received against the award of the aforesaid tender. However, the allegations by the petitioners that these objections were not considered or dealt with, which is effectively what was before this committee, are actually totally devoid of any truth. I must also just say that the Auditor General found nothing untoward about the awarding of the tender when it was awarded, in the year it was awarded, which is the 2012-13 year. We were only informed as a municipality in 13-14, at the start of the audit, that there had been representations made to the Auditor General by a person unknown, which is why the Auditor General then started to look at this tender, and a number of tenders. This is, we're not talking of one tender. People seem to isolate the ISDF tender. This was about local, the award of local tenders. It's got, the ISDF is just part of a bigger whole here. In other words, the Auditor General only started to look at this thing 16 months after the award of the tender. At the time of the award, the Knysna Municipality appointed a lawyer, F.G. Fisher of the firm C.J. Balan, to deal with the objections. All the objections considered relevant were submitted to Mr. Fisher, including the objection of Ms. Campbell. 17th of May, the then municipal manager responded to the objections as to why the council was not setting aside the award. We have a copy of the letters are in here. On the 20th of May, the attorneys Ed Rask, acting on behalf of Ms. Campbell, submitted a response to the municipal manager. It's also in here. 21st of May, the municipality responded again to those attorneys. Again, the copies are there. There were then further communications. It ended effectively with the senior lawyer in the attorneys in question telling us that they would be consulting with their advocates to bring an urgent interdict application against the municipality. No application was ever brought by Ms. Campbell or any objector to the ISDF tender. No objection has ever been brought against any tender awarded by the Knysna Municipality. We are probably, and I don't like blowing trumpets, but we're one of, certainly one of the few, the head of COCTA will probably know a lot better than I do, Chair of COCTA. We are one of the few local authorities that has never had a tender application been brought against. I think that needs to be really quite strongly stated. Knysna Municipality, Ms. Campbell then made a submission to the province, to the MEC of local government. That's probably why the gentlemen and ladies are here today. We submit that that matter is actually still ongoing. There have been a number of letters and reports kicking forwards and backwards between between us all. And again, we have documented all of that for you. We have ourselves been in contact with the Office of the MEC for Local Government with regards to the findings and our responses. The matter is yet to be concluded. The issue is about local content and the preferential procurement policy applied by the Knysna Municipality. 3 weeks ago, the State President made a comment by local. Knysna passed a policy in 2009-2010 in its procurement policy to procure locally as far as possible. It is absolutely pointless. A small town with a very small economic base purchasing vehicles from Benoni, for argument's sake, or paint from Cape Town, when for a little bit more we can actually buy from Knysna, from the dealers in Knysna. That's the basis of, it's the circular multiplier effect of what goes through the economy. And if you go into the Constitution, and I am absolutely certain that you are far more clued up on the Constitution than I am. I think it's section 151, 52, actually states the local economy and what the local authorities must do to drive that local economy. Be that as it may, all of the issues regarding local content in terms of the ISDF and in terms of the other awards, tenders which were awarded, is sitting before the NISNA Municipal Public Accounts Committee. That's where it is at this point in time. Because all of the fuss, if you like, has taken it to that point. We have shown in our financial statements, there is a line in our financial statements that we have cleared it as irregular expenditure with a rider, that National Treasury needs to make a decision on this. National Treasury has never made a decision on this. We have contacted National Treasury twice regarding the local tender issue. Ultimately, it is comes back to a council decision, but we have contacted National Treasury twice to come and help us make a decision on local content and how it should be actually applied in this instance. Our MPAC is actually sitting today looking at precisely the same issue. We have enclosed, as another annexure, a minutes of the MPAC committee, where you can see, and it includes the documentation from your committee that you received from the petitioner. They're looking at exactly the same thing at this point in time. But we've included in our minutes of MPAC for you to show you that we're not sweeping anything under the rug. It is there, it is upfront being dealt with by our MPAC committee today. And over the last few weeks, it's been dealt with there. The petitioner has made reference to various letters addressed by himself, that is Mr. Hampton, to the Office of the Public Protector. The person who presented his petition to the ISDF has made similar complaints to the Office of the Public Protector. On the 23rd of November, the Office of the Public Protector responded to Ms. Campbell, and I'm going to quote from the letter of the Public Protector. Please note that if the ISDF report was read in isolation from the enclosed letter, it would be prejudicial to the NISNA municipality. Both the petitioner and Ms. Campbell chose to ignore the findings or correspondence from the Office of the Public Protector. In fact, the petitioner himself goes as far as to accuse the Office of the Public Protector of not performing her duty, simply because he is at variance with what he personally believes to be the truth, despite all the evidence to the contrary. We have taken note of Ms. Campbell's response to the responses submitted to the Office of the NEC in the Western Cape. We submit, Ms. Campbell wasn't party to the investigation undertaken by the NEC for local government and provincial treasury, and she needs to let the matter take its course. And taking its course is for provincial to do its job, for national to do its job, and ultimately for the municipality to do its job. So that is how the process is. Should be working here. With regard to the ISDF itself, now bearing in mind that this tender was awarded in 2013, the ISDF on the 9th of March, the completed ISDF, or the draft latest variant of the ISDF, actually appears at our mayoral committee. So the work 3 years later, it runs into thousands of pages and volumes. It appeared before a mayoral committee with the recommendation that the draft ISDF be adopted and published for another round of extensive public participation. Ms. Campbell herself has been one of the active members of the community involved in the ISDF process. She's made representations to council when the ISDF was presented, and all of her comments have been taken notice of, and they will be considered before the ISDF is finally adopted. So the current ISDF actually shows what the municipality has held throughout. There is no conflict of interest in the original issues which were raised. And the spatial development and framework in particular, and this was one of the points that Ms. Campbell particularly was concerned about, it has not been drafted to favour any development or proposed development by the gentleman, Mr. Chris Mulder, who actually the company was given the tender in the first place. There could never, ever be a conflict in this regard because it is council that ultimately has to take the decision as to where development takes place and how and what and why. So there can never be a conflict of interest into this thing. And the drafting of this framework has been done very closely under the very watchful eyes of both provincial government departments and the national departments who are involved in this thing. So there's a whole team of people working on this. The process has been very open and incredibly transparent. And I would wish to submit that from the draft framework presented to council, it clearly demonstrates that we have obtained value for money for this thing. At a guess, if we went out to tender to do this again, the tender would be close to 5 million. I think we've paid just over two and a half for this ultimate document. With regards to the illegal appointment of the municipal manager, I'm going to hand it over now to...
Maybe before you give the executive mayor to take the one that affects you, can you jump into the one that's speaking about blocking of the petitioner from your,
This was actually considered, and I believe the document, I don't know if you've got the documentation, this was actually considered by provincial government in their submission that has been made. So, and we have considered it in our submission to you. So it's actually covered there by the provincial side of this equation. Yeah. Shall I go through it?
I thought you'll have, isn't it the allegations here are saying the municipality blocked my access into, the public space. And it's not about the provincial. Talk to the area that you know.
Then I will do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, the provincial have commented on it. If there had been blocking, and I'm going to get into a little bit of an explanation going on. When I was appointed as the acting municipal manager, I actually removed all the blocks, if there were any blocks. Mr. Hampton operates a large number of addresses, websites, however you want to call it that. And Mr. Hampton has for many years now, frankly, been bombarding the municipality from a range of requesting information on various bits and pieces. That in itself is not an issue. That is,
any
member of the public is obviously entitled to do so. It is the sheer volume of it, but more importantly, it is the fact that Mr. Hampson knows perfectly well that the municipality has got an approved response customer complaint system in place, which essentially means that a complaint or a question must go into a central point, be given a central number, which we can then track. Mr. Hampton doesn't do that. He fires emails at everybody. Myself, the mayor, the water mechanic, it doesn't matter. He just... And that's where the blocking started, because there were complaints coming on various issues of these things, because it's not going through the proper system that we can manage the process. That is effectively what was happening. I think in recent months, Mr. Hampton, because all of the blocks, as far as I'm aware, there are, as I say, there's a myriad of these things, that Mr. Hampton's blocks are now lifted. Certainly, as I say, I requested them to be lifted when I took over. And I think he has become slightly better in trying to get it through the system. But it still happens an awful lot that he is still hitting where he can just to get information. It's basically, we've also said some of those emails, questions are aggressive and derogatory. to the staff. On his website, he has also published cartoons, which frankly are, to all intents and purposes, racist to the staff and to my mayor. So I think there comes a point when you have to say enough is enough, and you just have to, which has possibly brought us to this point. This may be the point of enough is enough, and let us sit down and actually try to go through this again. It is extremely disturbing and debilitating when a local authority is being plowed through the mill, frankly, with really no substance. But you cannot respond. We have deliberately, and I will say it later, we have not taken Mr. Hampson on publicly. It's not the job of a municipality to be doing that. Our function is to govern. We have to accept criticism in all its facets and all its forms. But really, there comes a time when I think when enough is enough in these things. And when staff are receiving derogatory emails, aggressive behaviour, cartoons, I think the point has been reached. However, as I say, Mr. Hampson is now unblocked. I have to say, he does not contact me. And I'm assuming, as I'm looking across, is he now getting tracked mail? He is now getting tracked mail so that we can answer his questions in line with our procedures and with our policies.
Thank you very much. Back to Executive Mayor on the part that remains.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, in the petitioner's submission to you, it says it's a legal appointment of the municipal manager, but I want to call it alleged illegal appointment. The evaluation of Mr. Easton's competence to hold office was evaluated in terms of the evaluation criteria set out in the regulations on the appointment of senior managers, which was promulgated on the 17th of January 2014. Mr. Easton received the highest overall scores measured against the core competencies set out in the aforementioned regulation. We have submitted Mr. Easton's curriculum vitae as NHI, which we will give to you. As CFO, he was first the CFO of the municipality before he became the municipal manager. Mr. Easton received two clean audits, with the third being achieved whilst holding the position of municipal manager. We deny that Mr. Easton's salary is illegal. Therefore, we attach here to a copy of Mr. Easton's contract of employment as Initiator J. Mr. Easton was paid in accordance with the total remuneration package, maximum plus an additional 9% market premium allowance, and such an allowance was provided for in the now amended upper limit notice. Mr. Easton held the same qualifications when he was appointed by the Nyasa municipality in 2002, 2006, and again in 2012. We have irrefutable proof that Mr. Easton does indeed hold a bachelor's degree from Glasgow Caledonian University. We have, via the Office of the MEC, submitted to this committee a copy of the university degree of the municipal manager, a printout of the credit records from the university itself, and a verification by an accredited agency of that he holds such a degree. It must be highlighted that all the information that the petitioner submitted to this committee has been obtained from the municipality from the various council agendas and robust debates that take place in council, the majority of which the petitioner frequently attends. We make a point of that to not miss any of our committee meetings. So that is my submission on that. Short. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Executive Mayor. Colleagues, once again, let's come to questions of clarity. We should not fall into the deliberation once again, just as one. Any indication, Honourable Chetty?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, thank you. You know, sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot. And I think that's what you must remember. I mean, had you made yourself certain at the initial meeting, a lot of this would have been made our lives much easier than having to reconvene. Chairperson, I'm trying to find out, this being Racism Week and a parliament, we should be taking the lead. The Muslim Menzi made reference to those cartoons on racism, or bordering on racism. Could we make sure as well that that was sent to us, so that we can address that issue based on the fact that the petitioner brought this to us? It's important here that we do deal with that. And Chairperson, I'm trying to find out, when we speak about the initial blocking of Mr. Hampson, and we speak about Solomon's email, could we have an indication of roughly what was the number of emails? It's important, Chairperson, our core responsibility as local government should be service to the people. And if people are deliberately trying to hamper us from doing that, we need to address the issue. So if you can give us an indication as to what numbers we're looking at as an involvement. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, sir. Chair, through you, the cartoons we have included in the act here. With regards to the number of emails and everything else, we will set our IT department on them to get them as soon as possible to you, hopefully by the end of this week.
Any clarification question if Honourable Quimby and Mark, Honourable Mokwele, Honourable Mohar. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm a little bit not clear about this thing of blocking. Again, not blocking. Because the mayor did the MM thing. He didn't block. He blocked. He admitted that he blocked because of the pirate emails. And again, he said he didn't block it. So I'm just clarity or whether he thought that. And he's also mentioned that because they want to govern. They don't want to listen, but I don't understand how to govern. If you cannot listen to the people, if they have a problem, what kind of governing that he's talking about? Without listening, without taking care of the people of that area. Thank you.
Through you, Chair, I said I unblocked him. I unblocked it when I took over.
When? Huh? After how long?
Oh, probably it must have been 2 years. I think the previous municipal manager had blocked him. So I unblocked when I took over, when I was put into acting. Chair, with regard to the second point, it's not a question of governing. It's a question of, the questions are flying at the administration. If the administration cannot do its job, because it's tied up answering questions. We're not a big local authority. It's a very small, relatively small same as I said, we're a middling local authority. So we have a smallish management team who can handle complaints, procedures, etc. When they are tied up trying to answer questions, when there is a complaints procedure which is running for, say, a week, in other words, there's a pothole, it will be fixed, blah, 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 there's a reason for this, and we have specific time responses. For example, an account query can take a week. In technical services, a water leak, this may sound rather silly, but if it goes into our system, it can take 2 weeks to fix because of the nature of the beast that we're talking about. Mr. Hampson is wanting an answer within a day or 2 days. To be simple about it, if he sends something to the mayor, a question to the mayor will, the secretary of the mayor will pick it up. The mayor works through the municipal manager to go to the administration. So she sends it, or the email comes down to me. I may not be there. My secretary will now look at this and send it to the director of technical services. You could already have had a day wasted on just on that. The question hasn't been answered yet. You must remember the question has not been answered at this point. From that point, it goes into where the director is, and then from him into his teams. So these things I can see it takes. Bureaucracies are slow beasts, which is why we have these timetables that run. Mr. Hampson is not interested in that. He wants, a bit like the he kind of operates like a press. I want an instant answer. Why haven't you given me the answer? And he immediately blogs on his Facebook page why he doesn't give an answer. Respectfully, Chair, there is a blog on his Facebook page today, actually it was on yesterday, slightly criticising this committee as to why he only received his invite to this committee yesterday. It's on his Facebook page. Now, I'm sure that is not a criticism of this committee, but if you read it, it looks like a criticism of this committee. That's the point I'm trying to deal with on these things. Sorry, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I only have two questions to the MM. In terms of your communication system in the municipality, I can see that Mr. Hampton is on your nerve. And being on your nerve, it means your communication system within your municipality is not on. Because if you had a communication system that is sound, this thing of nagging you, wanting to know how far is his questions or response are, you'll deal with that. So I'm checking, how often do you hold your public participation? And how do you do it? Are you doing it like calling community and address the issues, or you categorize your community in terms of dealing with the matters of the communities? And then the issue of blocking and unblocking, you know, I was once a municipal I know I've worked with people like Mr. Hampton, but I've never dismissed them, and I happen to be an advisor of the mayor. We have never dismissed them, no matter how nagging they can be, because whatever that you do as a government institution will economically batla go translate le ke go bua ka maema
that
le gore wena as an institution, how do you portray yourself to the community that you are serving? You'll end up being a bad institution executing good things. You are good in papers, you are good. Your reports, Auditor General, number one. Your IDPs, I think, number one. But coming to the ground itself, it says another story. That on its own, it will impact negatively into what you are doing. So this thing of blocking, I want you to explain thoroughly to us. I didn't get you well. You said he was blocked because he sent everybody. He's a citizen of South Africa. He has the right to do that. Even to us, he can send. We will respond. Acknowledgement of receipt. We'll respond to your matter in 2 days. That is what is supposed to happen. But if you say he sends this one and that one and that one, and it means you are not communicating to him. If you say acknowledgement of receipt, your matter has been taken care of, will respond to you in 7 days. Hopefully, I think he will come back to you in 7 days. Thank you, Chair, for now.
Answer, please. Let's try to be distinct when we answer. As much as I'm also asking from honourable members, let's throw a distinct question. I know you. If you wanted to talk to it, answer.
I can see that your communications department
will come to you.
It's very difficult to answer this very succinctly, but I will try. The one thing I said to my mayoral committee when they appointed me in my interview, I said, we need to communicate. Clearly, we're still not communicating specifically to Mr. Hampton. We have a whole raft of communication systems operating. We have very active ward committees. We have public participation units. We have a communications department, which has now been set up. The gentleman is sitting here. He has a number of staff members also operating very well. Mr. Hampton attends our Section 80 meeting. He attends our mayoral committee meeting. He attends our council meeting. He does not attend the ward committee meeting. He's not interested in attending the ward committee meeting. I genuinely agree that we need to go back to basics and send him an automatic response that says your question will be dealt with in 7 days. But we do that, and we get blogged on Facebook the next day. That's what happens. It's unfortunate, but that is the reality that we're having to deal with here. So yes, our communication probably needs to be better in this regard, but this is an individual who isn't interested in our communication methodologies, and that is effectively the problem we have.
Are you comfortable?
I just want to add on to that. Mr. Hampton said the requirements in his email. He will send you an email, then he said, I want a response by this time, today. If he sends it in the morning, I want it by 3 o'clock. Whether you tell him, we will respond within a certain amount of ample time, that is normally a day or two, he sets his own requirements.
Honorable Mohab.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Chair, just to please don't record, Adonis is speaking. I think with limited time that we have for this matter, I don't think we are going to be able to do justice to address the pride of the people of
Christ. On the clarity seeking question.
Yes, I'm just making a comment, Chair, that much as I'll be coming up on clarity seeking questions, bear with me if I consume most of your time. Chair, on a clarity seeking question, one, is the municipality aware of the freedom of expression of every resident? Given that you keep on emphasizing that you are bombarded, that is the first thing. Two, is the municipality aware from the very same Section 152 of the Constitution, which are outlining constitutional obligations from the side of you as the municipality? One, you are obliged to ensure that you encourage participation and involvement of our communities in the affairs of the municipality. Hence, Mr. Hampton. Two, you need to ensure that you are democratic and also accountable to your own community. Is the municipality aware? If you are aware, why are you irritated by Mr. Hampton's submissions to you? Not only that, if you go to Section 16 of the Municipal Assistance Act, it is saying your obligation as the municipality is to ensure that you encourage participation of local communities in the affairs of the municipality. It doesn't end up there. It goes further in terms of Section 16, Subsection 1B, to say you must also contribute towards building capacity of our communities. Perhaps if you might have picked up that there's a weakness or a deficiency from one of the residents, what are you doing as the municipality to ensure that you also assist in terms of building capacity, particularly around the community, the communication policy framework that you have as a municipality? Three, blocky or unblocky, what are the legal implications that the municipality considers that prompted you to ultimately decide not to block? Chairperson, there's an indication that Naisna municipality cannot comment on Naisna tourism because it's a Section 21 campaign. I just want to check, are there councillors participating in the board of trustees? How were they identified? If they were identified, how do you link participation of councillors in a structure that you said you don't have any role to make any comment around. I'm saying this thing, Chairperson, with the proviso of Section 59 of the Municipal Systems Act, which outlines delegation of powers. Were these councillors delegated to participate on behalf of the municipality? If they were delegated, what is their mandate? And let me place it on record. If today you are saying you can't make any comment on national tourism, yet you delegate people to participate in that structure, go back and check provision of Section 59, particularly provision that says that doesn't necessarily divest the council from taking full responsibility. How do you link it? Especially where you are saying there's a 4 million that you are injecting into Naisna municipality. Yes, well and good, there's positive audit outcome that you are relating to. You are even emphasizing that the separate legal, I mean the separate audit outcome that you find from the institution, that is the municipality, and also from the national tourism. Remember, you entered into service delivery agreement with tourism, I mean national tourism, for the simple reason that your view was that you are unable to execute the tourism responsibility. And if you go further, if you go further in terms of service level agreement, the provision of the Systems Act is very clear. You do an assessment. I just want to check, what assessment have you done? Did you consider the views of the labor component, because it's one of the component and one of the requirements? If yes, do you have a copy that you can also finish the committee with? Again, if you go further in terms of service level agreement, service level agreement doesn't necessarily mean those people are permanent there, you'll forever pump resources of the taxpayers without necessarily ensuring that you accumulate capacity. If you check in terms of the provisions that outline the stipulations, especially around the service level agreement, it's very clear. You must also look at the potential, future potential of capacity, so that you can be in a position to deal with it. Is that particular aspect considered by the municipality? If not, why not? And maybe I must also place it on our chairperson. We are not a commission. We are a committee of parliament, because in your submission you keep on making reference to us as a commission. And again, on your statement, you said to us you cannot comment on national tourism. But under clause 6 of service delivery agreement, you are indicating to us both operational and expenditure reports is reported to Section 80 committee. If it's reported to you, what is your business in it? Because you said you don't have any role in terms of the role that is being played by national tourism. There's allegations that are made that Mr. Hampton was paid 15,000 twice, which is 30,000 for training. When it was cancelled after SFA was made, is then that he became irritated and he started to start writing. Okay, very clear, we are dealing with a municipality that had a relationship with a particular person. Perhaps we must clarify, what is it specifically that prompted Mr. Hampton to be so angry? Because you kept on making reference that perhaps he's angry for the simple reason that he didn't do whatever that you might have in your own mind. You did a survey. What is informed a survey? Was it done across the board, or was it specifically attached to Mr. Hampton? And if there was a survey, what were the findings of that particular survey? There's an allegation, Chairperson, that part of the money that was allocated to national tourism had to cater for court battles. There's an allegation of an amount wasting plus minus 200,000 that was also a cost. Not only that, there's also an allegation that 270,000 was a handshake given to the former CEO. If I can just get clarity on those particular matters, perhaps I'll make a follow up again.
Thank you. Chair, thank you to you.
Yes.
I think that I need to, let's just go through this a little bit. The documentation that we have submitted to you contains the last two service level agreements between NISA Tourism and ourselves. There is an expiry date of 30 September 2016 on the latest one. Currently, there are three members of NISA Municipality who sit on the board of NISA Tourism. And I just need to explain this. One is the Speaker of the Municipality. One is the Chief Whip of the ANC. And one is the Director Planning. The reason the Director Planning is sitting there is...
You know, we must not be opportunistic. The Speaker equally belongs to a particular party. Don't be convenient to say the Speaker, then when you come to a councillor, you are specific to say the ANC. I'm saying it's more opportunistic and it's unacceptable.
I apologize.
To rule, honourable members, I certainly must proceed. By saying so, I feel there is honour in the response.
Just on a point of order, a speaker is supposed to be impartial. So in other words, if he's there in his capacity as a speaker, he's not representing a political party, he's there in his capacity as speaker. It's only in Parliament where the speaker is not impartial.
Can you proceed, Municipal Manager? Can you proceed? I'm the one who is carrying. If I said proceed.
These other things don't even focus on.
Thank you, Chair. The third member is the Director of Planning. Under normal circumstances, the third member would be the Municipal Manager. However, because Council took a decision last year to review the potential status of NISA Tourism, one of the triggers in the Section 78 of the Systems Act is precisely what you were referring to, that you have to go through the community and labour and everything else. Now what we have here is actually a Section 77, I think it is, of the Systems Act. So it's a reversal. We're not going from in to out, which is the normal, let's call it outsourcing for a better word. We're looking at, should we be continuing with NISA Tourism in its current format, i.e. in a private sector Section 21 company, or as a municipal entity, or as a department of council. So we're actually reviewing that. I have been tasked to lead that process. Therefore, I stood down as the member of the board and put the Director of Planning on the board from the municipality's perspective, because I'm actually doing that Section 77 ultimate investigation. And you are perfectly correct, it does need a broad spectrum, views of the community, views of labour and everything else, just to do this whole thing. And it's a long process, as you're fully aware. So that explains why we're going slowly with this thing. It's also, we allude to that in the pack as well. The board is there to look at the strategic operations of NISA Tourism, not the day-to-day operations. The operations run day-to-day They have their own chief executive officer, they have their own finance manager, their own administrator, their own publicity head, blah, 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 all the way down. And that is the point I was trying to say, that we as a council, or council, we get reports which are robustly interrogated, but the actual day-to-day operations of tourism actually happens within the tourism operation itself with the board members, of whom three are there from council. There are also three from the community who are appointed. And then there are six members of NYSNA. Anybody in NYSNA can be appointed to the board on that. So that is, we don't look at, the council doesn't look at the day-to-day operations of NYSNA Tourism, and that is the point that you were making about court battles and all of that. That is an answer that NYSNA Tourism must answer. We can't answer that question specifically. As I said, the board doesn't get down into the detail of, the council doesn't get down into the detail of that, the board members. In fact, if you, I'm sure, I can put this in, wherever it is, I can read you. This is actually the directors acknowledge that they are ultimately responsible for the system of internal financial control established by the company and place considerable importance in maintaining a strong control environment, etc., etc., etc. That's actually the auditor's report and the director's responsibilities and approval of NYSNA Tourism, of their financial, which is shown in their financial statements and their auditors. So that, and we're happily to submit that as well to you. So you can see the governance issues that link the municipality.
If you can address me, you'll be able to see me when I'm saying move forward. But when you are looking on the other side, even when I said move, you don't see me.
I do apologize.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. So I hope that covers the questions that were just asked just now.
Honourable one.
Questions?
Can she proceed? I'm worried that we are going to have 5 minutes. But you correctly said we don't have time, and I thought you were looking at that. Proceed on the ground.
Can you jump in? On page 1, failure to respond in each of every allegation contained in the aforesaid petition should not be considered as an admission. What does that mean? How many that you couldn't respond? And why?
If you can help members to know which page one you are referring to, which document?
The one with the logo of NYSNA municipality.
Can we get an answer? Chair, thank you. Through you.
Mr. Hampton makes a whole raft of allegations, many of which have got nothing to do with the municipality, and therefore we cannot answer on behalf of those other petitioners. We can only answer on behalf of the municipality. He talks of provincial government, he talks of the public prosecutor, he talks of the premier, I think he talks of the police somewhere in there. So I cannot answer. We cannot answer on behalf of them. That's all this means.
Thank you very much. And first, my question is to the executive mayor. According to the appointment of the MM, want to know whether when they appointed the mayor was according to the advent, and if it was according to advent, another question I want to ask. About the requirement of the advert. And secondly, did they advertise this post once and they appoint the mayor. If they determine
the municipal manager.
Come again?
Well, you wanted to say municipal manager, but you have said that the mayor by the change, I'm sure.
That's what the mayor was talking about, the appointment of the...
No, you wanted to say the appointment of the municipal manager, but you said the appointment of the mayor.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, mayor was elected, not appointed.
Thank you.
Sorry. Want to know whether it was according to the advert, what was the requirement of the advert? And secondly, how many times did they advertise this position? And how did they come to this appointment of the MM? Is it according to exactly the requirement? Because I don't know whether, because there's something that's saying that I don't know, but if I can get the advert itself, whether the advert was very according or he was the best qualified or whatever in that position.
Thank you, Honorable. Is it the advert part of the package?
No, we didn't put it in, but we will send it.
Can we also have
and it was advertised twice.
No, I'm saying, can we also have the copy of the advert?
Yes, we will. We will
also
send
that. Because the allegations why the advert is important, it was amongst other that you required a person who at least can speak three languages in this particular province, including Xhosa. So I'm sure that's the area that you wanted to be sure, okay? I'm worried we are almost out of time. But I thought one area that you haven't spoke, you said you can't speak on behalf of tourism, what have you. But you are saying you are giving them money. In terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act, you can't throw money and stay back. You look at whether your money is used for the intended purpose. How do you then speak to the money? Because there is this allegation that said for your tourism sponsored 134 group of people, including Rastafari, to an international tour. How do you make sure that your money is not part of that if you don't talk to them? The fact that the very same tourism spent 22 months without appointment of I'm still talking, Honorable Martin, can you give me an
opportunity?
You give them money despite the fact that they spent 22 months without appointment of the CEO. How do you justify that you were in order in that? I'm sure those are the only two that I thought is important for my part to look into them. Honorable Mark.
Chairperson, I'm not sure, because by the look of things, we are pressed up with time. Can I perhaps request your wisdom to either adjourn with the proviso that we agree as a committee, when can we have ample time dedicated for this, and in that, if need be, let's also summon the tourism board, National Tourism, to appear together with this. I'm saying this thing because if you check Chairperson, Section 76 of the Municipal Assistance Act, much as the municipality wishes to run away from the fact that they can't really take responsibility. Section 76 is very clear, it's saying the municipality may render a service or provide a municipal service in its area or part of its service, though it outlines those specific categories, including this one of using NYSCA. So who's rendering the service? It remains the competence of the municipality, so that it has delegated it. And that is why I said if you read this provision together with Section 59 of the Delegation of Powers, the municipality cannot divest its responsibility of giving account. Hence, I'm saying, Chairperson, with due respect, I think it would be proper for us to do justice to this so that when we come to a conclusion as the committee, we have explored all avenues for us to arrive at an informed conclusion on this matter. That would be my submission, Chairperson.
Can you answer those that were questions? These other ones are for the committee.
Chair, you asked about the money being spent and the control. I think, as I said earlier, there is, within Rise of Tourism itself, there is monthly reporting to their board. There is quarterly reporting to the municipality itself. So we are aware of what's going on all the time. With regard to Rastafarians, Chairperson, I don't know that would be a day-to-day, but NISA has a very broad community and a very broad economy.
If you are saying you can't comment on the activity of the board while you are giving it the money, how do you assure us that the money you don't throw and go, you know what the money is used for? That's where the question is.
It is contained in our service level agreements, which our municipal councillors attend the board meetings. The service level agreements are, as I said, audited by the Auditor General and by their own independent auditors and by our auditors, and when the budget comes up at
the
beginning of the year.
You know the danger of not responding to questions. You are saying the committee will decide on themselves without you contributing to the determination. And the reason for this question is to help the committee to have in their determination accommodate your views, the answers that you provided. If you decided to say, no, I'm going to become the way I am, I'm saying I don't want to talk about this thing while you are giving it money, well, the committee will use this question. I thought it's improper for me to advise you that the moment while the police are saying you are entitled not to talk, once you don't talk, the magistrate will just give a verdict based on the allegations leveled against you. So the sooner you explain your side, you help the other party say, no, this is not correct, the correct party is 1, 2, 3. So the impression we are creating here is any allegation of maladministration leveled here, you agree with it. That's the impression you are giving to us. Because you can't give money and you don't look at whether the money is used accordingly. Well, honorable members, I'm sure you are hearing it for yourself. And then if they don't hire CEO for 22 months and you keep on giving them money, what assurance are you getting? Where do you get assurance that your interest in terms of the money you are giving will be properly looked up?
I think, Chair, I will be very careful in my response. We are not condoning any maladministration, because I don't think any maladministration has taken place. The issue you have, and I'm looking now at Mr. Hampton's submission or allegation regarding an office manager being paid a handsome salary from the development fund. Previously, she'd scored a trip to Jamaica paid by public funds. I'm assuming that is the type of where you're going with it. That is a day-to-day decision of NISA Tourism. It is within the scope of the service level agreement that we have with NISA Tourism to do various acts that are required by national, by the municipality. That's where we're going with it.
Right, fine.
Order
now. Yes,
Mr. Singh, you tried to assist the Honourable MN, but it seems it's more flexible or more economical in terms of presenting his report. Because you can't say you are not responsible, yet you are receiving the quarterly reports in terms to the Section 80, and you are even boasting to us that you even robustly engage on the report around expenditure and operational. And those are the same things that are happening in that particular board. Hence, if you get the report, you own up to it because you adopt that report. So I'm saying this is just clear running away from responding. And I'm saying, Chairperson, with due respect, you have put it into context. Honorable MM is not assisting the municipality. Instead, the more he feels he's not going to give us details. Whereas he's got reports that he has confirmed in his report that the Section 80 report that they get from the same national tourism, it's really worrying, Chairperson.
Honorable Mokwele,
initiatives of policy.
Honorable Chair, I think we have exhausted this matter. And I'm requesting to the MM that don't try to bribe us with your answering, because you might end up in Ulumumatate. You know, there is what we call IDP in the municipality, where all stakeholders are involved, and I assume tourism, whatever that we are talking about now, sits in your IDPs. That's why you have your service level agreement with you. What I will request, Chair, is that, you know, for us to listen to the municipality and listen to the petitioner without the municipality, and listen to other, I think we need to have all the concerned people in one room so that we conclude this matter. We've got so many petitions like the Bafokeng that I'm passionate about and others that we must deal with, because this is the same thing. It's a DA-led municipality with its shortfalls. We have other municipalities that are led by ANC with their shortfalls. So we cannot just sit here and as if we are contesting the space as political parties. So I'm requesting that we call everybody for the last time. We call everybody in one room. We finalize the matter. We come with our determination. We move forward. I'm pleading with you, Chair.
Honorable Kathy, Honorable Kimby, don't kill me. Definitely in the next 3 or 5 minutes like that. Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have a concern if we're now going to try to reconvene everything and get everybody back there. There is a cost implication to this. I mean, we'll be serious about this. Me, Chairperson, personally, I can tell you right now, I'm ready to conclude. And I've been serious. I mean, there's an SLA, there's an audited statement that's going through the effect of that, which we as a committee can deliberate on. I believe members have further questions of clarity. We can put that in writing and just get that from the officials where we need clarity-seeking questions and present that before us as a committee that sits in Cape Town, as opposed to bringing people to and fro. More importantly, Chairperson, right now, and like I said, I do not want to make this as if I am pronouncing on it, but Chairperson, we've got other petitions that are far more crucial of consequences that affect more than just one or two people. And that I don't want to pronounce on, Chairperson, as to whether this is about individuals involved with an issue with the municipality or whether you really want to deal with issues pertaining to the community at large. And I don't think we can afford to go and have another reaction to this whole thing with expenses, which will be fruitless and wasteful, Chairperson, to bring people back again yet to hear the same thing. We're not going to hear anything different. We've asked the petitioner what we wanted to. We now ask the municipality what we want to.
Okay.
And that's what we must do, Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Chair. I thought when Honorable Mahathir spoke about calling and also Mukwege, we will try from, you know, the management point of view, acquire all necessary information to enable you to arrive at decision. And when you have everything and you still feel we need extra information, which might even include interacting directly with whoever you wanted to, then we'll apply our mind at that particular time. But for now, let's take it that we will get every little piece of information. Those that we ask the information and we don't get, they are saying it is our discretion now to decide what we believe, what we don't believe. Because when you ask a person an information and a person does not give, what do you do? You develop your own conclusion out of what you have, and then you leave it at that. I was going to say, for now, let's stop here and make sure that Nkanyiso, you will obtain any little information that will assist members to arrive at the determination. And in the discussion, if there are things that
members feel we still need that kind of information, would agree at the method whether we will have to extend the invitation or the information in our disposal is enough for us to have. Honorable Mark.
Chairperson, last before I said, but can we also put into context that we are not satisfied in the manner in which the municipality responded to questions, especially where they were unable to give us specific answers to specific questions that were posed to them, for the simple reason that they kept on shifting such a responsibility. I think if that is the case, then we'll be more comfortable with the proposal.
Thank you very much. Honorable
Chair, let me say some members, not all.
Come again.
With Honorable Martin's comment, we cannot take it, careful with all due respect, you cannot make a blanket statement that all of us are not conforming.
Okay.
We must have some members, the some of us are
not.
Can I lead the meeting towards the conclusion, Honorable? I know the issues that we are dealing with more often does have, you know, some element of politicking. And as politician, you'll always, you know, fall into those spaces and play, you know, games there. Can I take this opportunity to thank everybody, honorable members, yourself, the municipality of Nasa, the provincial government representatives present here. The media, the monetary group, everybody, thank you very much. And thank you, Honorable Sambi, for allowing us the space to conclude this day. And this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.